ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Translation and published in the
language
whether there was a source to the stem of the lotus of your birth, and illuminated into that stem, you could not trace out anything. But at that time, I manifested my form from within, what should be required. The personality of God can be experienced only by His causeless mercy, not by mental speculation or with the help of the material senses. Material senses cannot approach transcendental understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can be appreciated only by submissive devotional service when he reveals himself before a devotee. Only by love of Godhead can one know God, and not otherwise. The Personality of Godhead cannot be seen with the material eyes, but he can be seen from within by spiritual eyes, opened by the appointment of love of Godhead. As long as one's spiritual eyes are closed due to the dirty coverings of matter, one cannot see the Lord. But when the dirt is removed by the process of devotional service, one can see the Lord without a doubt. Brahma's personal endeavor to see the root of the lotus pipe failed. When the Lord was satisfied by his penance and devotion, he revealed himself from within with no external endeavor. Brahma was curious. He found himself sitting on a lotus root, therefore he's known as Kamalasana. He sits on a lotus root. And he wonders where this lotus flower is growing, what is the source. So he tried to find out. How would you find out? You go down to the bottom. Should be a fairly easy thing to do. If you're in position A and you want to know what is in position B, you have to go from A to B. It's very simple. However, he wasn't successful. How was that? Because he was trying by his own endeavor to find out that which is not understandable by one's own endeavor, namely, what is the source of everything. Because while he was trying to find the source of the lotus, the source of the lotus was Narayana, who was the source of everything, and you can't find Narayana by any material means. That's why when the so-called scientifically minded people say that we don't see God in our telescope or our microscope or any other scopes, that means he doesn't exist. But the very statement is foolish. Because there's no question of finding God in any such scope or by any material means, however perfect they may be. However much we may develop science, it will always be insufficient to find out God. Because by nature, God is of a different, he has a completely different characteristics to those of the material. Therefore, he cannot be found by any material means. There are many such evidences in the Vedic scriptures. Pantastu koti shatagatsara sampratam yovayora tapi manaso muni pungavanam so pyasti yatra vidhi sinya vinchintya tatve govindamadi purushottamajami. This verse refers to the highly sophisticated material means of trying to find out the absolute truth called yoga, which is also a material means. Or it may be considered somewhat spiritual in that the goal is ostensibly spiritual. Ostensibly, no, this means. Well, it means it's purportedly, it's said to be. It's said to be something spiritual. All of yoga is supposed to be something. It's said to be spiritual. Although actually we see the yogis, they're bhakti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanti. They all have something. They have a material desire. Their desire is to have some siddhi. Or even if their goal is to understand the Paramatma, that is also not completely pure. Only the desire to attain Krishna, only that is completely pure. So even if someone is trying to be pure, unless they're trying to understand Krishna, or unless they're open to understand Krishna, they cannot be considered completely pure. We see Shukadeva Goswami, he was an impersonalist. And Anishtito Inaya Gurye, he says, so I was fixed in personal realization. But then, Uttama Shloka Nilaya, when he heard the pastimes of Krishna, then he became attracted to that. So he wasn't envious of Krishna, as Krishna tells to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Because you're not envious of me, therefore I'm speaking to you. And there's no point to speak to people who are envious of Krishna. You can't understand. They simply cannot understand. They're not capable. Even if they have a very big brain and a Nobel Prize and a PhD and everything else that a big brain person is supposed to have, very often they can't understand even very simple points. You'll be surprised in the Western countries. I don't know about nowadays, things have changed now that many millions of Prabhupada's books have been distributed and the atmosphere has been purified. But at least in the 1970s when I was making some neophyte attempts to preach Krishna consciousness in England, then we found that even we would meet very intelligent people, especially in the London area. People, many people, they're actually very intellectual, very intelligent, but only on a material platform. And often we'd meet people and we'd try to explain to them in very, very simple, logical way, you're not the body. They couldn't understand that topic. They just didn't. They just couldn't make any impression on my consciousness to how to understand. Of course I'm the body. I felt that. This Rahugana, he also said to Jagbharat, Jagbharat instructed him that you're not the body. And Rahugana said, well, I'm sure what you're saying is very good, but it doesn't seem to make any sense to me because it really seems to me that I am the body. See that example, you go like this and you feel it. Who or what is feeling? If not, you're saying the soul is different from the body, but the body is not conscious and the soul is conscious. But the consciousness I feel through the body, I feel. So how can you say I'm not the body? So it's very difficult, for, not that difficult, it's impossible for people who don't have the mercy of Krishna to understand Krishna. They simply cannot accommodate the concept of Krishna within their brain, because Krishna is bigger than any brain. There's a saying of trying to keep an elephant on a plate. If you try to put an elephant, you have one tummy. You want to put one elephant on it. Is it possible? Krishna can do it. He can shrink the elephant. But we can't do it. An elephant, even a baby elephant, is far too big to fit on a plate. So similarly, we're trying to accommodate God within our mind. This, who's that rascal? What's his name? Stephen Hawking. He wrote his famous book. What's that famous book? The Brief History of Time. He wrote a few stupid books. It's the most famous one. So at the end of that book, he says that well, if we, I can't remember exactly. I just looked at the end just to see what, I didn't read the whole thing, just to see what is his conclusion. So his conclusion is that if we can understand how the whole universe was created, then we will have achieved the pinnacle of knowledge before we will have understood the mind of God. He thinks by science he will understand the mind of God. And then another rascal wrote another book called The Mind of God, as if to say, yes, now I'm explaining the mind. Actually, our acharyas, they are explaining what is the mind of God. Krishna himself is stating, What is his mind? Patram pushpam pamamutayam yogam bhaktya vayatati tadam bhakti pantam shnami vayatata. If you offer me with love and devotion, I like that, Krishna. He's revealing his mind. What do you like? What do I like? This is my mind. 也说是正直的人。杀猪当归的要么说他们哪能要这个不是不是杀猪他们在不是不行哪能要这个家人的哪能这个我们的人的不是不是杀猪当归的要么要 The devotees they're in my heart and I am in their heart. I know nothing of them and they know nothing of me. This is the mind of God. And even our acharyas, they are very minutely, especially Vishwacharya Bhattacharya, is very minutely analyzed the words of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and analyzed some, not all, he himself states it. Talking about the Vasalita Tattva, the chapter describing the Vasalita, he says that if we were to make a commentary on all the points, it would be a very huge book. And most people wouldn't be able to understand it, therefore I'm not writing. But you get some comments that when Krishna is saying this and doing this, what he's saying one thing, and actually there are so many subtle implications. Just like when the gopis, he called them, you, very nice, you came, what do you want? And he came to say, you should go, you should serve your husband, this is the highest duty for you, which is true for every woman except the gopis. So, how he was playing and tricking like this. So the acharyas, they understand the mind of God. But a materialistic person cannot understand the mind of God. And some people are so materialistic that they don't accept that there is any God at all. There are various categories of materialistic people. There are some who don't even accept that there is any God. And there are some who are even worse. They accept that there is God, but they want to kill him. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he accepted Vishnu is supreme. Let him come here and I'll kill him. So then there are others who give lip service to God. They say, yes, there is God. You believe in God. But then when you speak to them, even they'll be doing bhakti. Just like I saw some devotees in the world, they were reading this Bhakta Mal, which is some book in India. Written by some Ramananda sadhu, describing the lives of different bhaktas of Ramananda. I was telling them, they may seem like bhaktas, but actually they're not. But if you, any Ramananda, you see their big tilak and they chant Ramananda, if you speak with them, you ever spoken to any Ramanandas? If you speak with them, what they think the absolute truth is, they don't believe in God as a person. They think the ultimate truth is simply to become one with Ram or whatever. They all have that. The 27 official groups. Of course, each one thinks there's one, and the other 26 are both. But there are so many groups in that sampradaya. And they're all actually Mayavadis, although they appear to be devotees in the Sinhajanis. Or Kabira, people think he's a great devotee. But he's not a devotee at all, he's a complete atheist. He said that if the deity is God, then I worship a big mountain. Better to worship a mountain. Because it's a big, it's a stone, you worship a big stone. Better to worship. So he has no faith in the deity. He thinks the deity is simply stone. And that he's supposed to be a great devotee. But he is an atheist. So there are people who are openly deny God, and there are others who say, yes, we believe in God, but he has no form, and he has no qualities. He's not a person. But they're also materialists, they know themselves. Krishna. And then there are devotees who are worshipping Krishna, but actually they are doing so for fulfillment of their material desires. They also can't understand Krishna. Because Krishna can be understood only by pure devotion. Bhaktyama Namijamati. When Krishna says, I can be understood by devotion, that means by pure devotion only. Of course, one can begin to understand Krishna as much as he develops pure devotion. Sometimes devotees have the idea that they say, well, when you become a pure devotee, then, you know, what happens and what do you see? They seem to have the idea that it just kind of happens all of a sudden. If you're doing a sadhana, you're just getting pure and pure and pure and pure, you get to 99%, 99.5, 99.99. One morning you wake up and you have tears flowing. By the way, just in Hare Krishna, 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 you're sadhana. Or all of a sudden, you have visions of Vrindavan, and you collapse and you faint. And you're a pure devotee. I made it. 100%. But it's not exactly like that. It's gradual development. Gradual development means that as a devotee develops, he gradually begins to understand Krishna. As much as we have pure desire, then Krishna reveals himself to us. And the process of sadhana bhakti is for purifying our consciousness. By performing sadhana bhakti, one is gradually purified and he gradually comes to understand about Krishna. And Krishna reveals more and more as the devotee goes on, more and more serving him. And Krishna helps the devotee. Tejam sastra yukkaram bhajatam priti purvatam vidami buddhi yogam tam yena mamopriyati. Krishna says, I give the knowledge to a devotee who worships me with love. He gives the knowledge by which he can come to me. He's come to see Brahma. He was searching out what is the source of everything. And Krishna helped him. He couldn't immediately see Krishna, but he was trying, and Krishna helped him. It's not that Krishna wants to reject the devotee. He doesn't reveal him. He doesn't reveal himself fully unless one is completely pure. But he reveals himself gradually. He doesn't reject the devotee. It's not that. One's not a pure devotee, he's rejected. And Krishna gradually helps him to come to him. He helped Brahma to come to him by instructing him to follow the process of sadhana, which for Brahma at that time was not exactly the same sadhana as we were performing, but he was asked to perform tapasya, his meditation on himself, Krishna. So by doing so, his consciousness was purified. And then Krishna revealed himself to Brahma. So the point is demonstrated now. One cannot understand Krishna by any material means. It is not possible. Of course, we often say that Krishna cannot be understood simply by brain power, which is a fact. Even if one is a has a very weak brain, you may not understand anything about Krishna. And I've seen that many, many times. That people are materially very intelligent, but spiritually extraordinarily foolish. I've seen this many times. Excellent brain. Very adept in material matters. But spiritually quite foolish. Just like I was hearing you discussing something about this steaming cubby, who is undoubtedly has some empowerment from Krishna to analyze human dealings, to see how they can run more smoothly. So he's materially extraordinarily intelligent, but spiritually he's a monk, which, if you know what that means, it's a very, very silly idea, some very silly ideas there, which I won't go into detail. But anyway, just to give some idea, they think that most Christians think, but they don't explicitly describe it in the detail of the Mormons, that when you get reincarnated, because they don't say that, they say the same body comes back as the missionary did. There's so much, actually, Jesus taught reincarnation, maybe not as clearly as in the Vedic scriptures. But he taught that, but that was rejected by later Christians because they didn't like the idea. And they're thinking, I might come back as a frog. I don't like that. So they rejected their idea. So they have the idea that you come back in the same body. The same body that's rotted, and that's why they prefer to bury it. They don't think that even if you bury it, then you might. Of course, they're thinking that Jesus is going to come very soon. But, you know, it's been 2,000 years now. There's quite a lot of rotted Christian bodies. How long does it take for the skeleton to rot? It doesn't. Just stays there forever?
Yeah, quite a long time.
Quite a long time. It's good to have a doctor present again. Scientific analysis. Quite a long time, even some hundreds of thousands of years. If in the right kind of atmosphere, preserved like rock. So their idea anyway is that the body comes back together because they're very attached to their bodies. And they're all the same person. Of course, you know, you might not want to have a penny nose. You might want to have a better looking body. But so you have the same body. And you come back and you go on with your family. And you live happily. I guess Jesus is there and he gives you tickets to a lottery or whatever else God is supposed to do. But they don't think you want to be with your family. Who do you want to be with? You want to be with your kids. They would probably want to be grown up. And you want to be with your grandmother, but she doesn't want to be a grandmother. 80 years old. So anyway, they have very silly ideas. So that's an example. There are so many examples of people who may be materially very intelligent, but spiritually very foolish. They may be, just like people say, Kali is pious because he believes in God. He's pious, more so than people who don't believe in God. But he cannot actually understand that because ultimately he's materialistic. Even most people who believe in God, they think that God's duty is to make life nice for me. They'll pray to God and he will make all arrangements. How I can live very happily and come to it. It's God's job. If God doesn't make life nice for me, then, you know, what's the use in believing? Just forget it, become a communist or something. So Krishna consciousness actually teaches this Bhagavad Bhakti is teaching theism at a level unknown practically in the world. Practically, even the worship of Lord Narayan by different Vaishnava Sampradayas, it's not really materialistic, it's not materialistic, but there's some tinge of self-desire there. The goal is like in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, their goal is Vishnu Kainkarya, which means to be a personal, to attain the position of a personal servant of the Lord, which is a laudable desire. It's not, it's a kind of personal desire in as much as, well, you desire to be with the Lord. There's nothing wrong with that. That's very good to be with him and serve him. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveals something even higher, that you don't demand even to have the service, even direct darshan of the Lord, even if you can just serve him, even if you don't see him. Naturally, the devotee wants to see Krishna. But if Krishna doesn't want to show himself to me, then for his pleasure, I'll not force myself. Adarshana, even if you don't show yourself to me, still you're my love, still I wish you. I don't demand anything from you. So that, of course, Krishna doesn't deny giving himself to his devotees, but the motive is there, or the attitude is there, that I'm not demanding anything from you, whatever he wants, whether he accepts me or rejects me, and simply want to serve without any personal motive. So, by that kind of devotion, one can understand Krishna. Understand means, to some extent, one cannot fully understand Krishna, because even Krishna cannot fully understand himself. We may think, well, that's a defect. How can it be God? He doesn't even understand himself. We criticize materialistic people. You don't understand yourself, you think you're the body. You don't understand you're the soul. Then we say that God, he also doesn't understand himself. Well, he does. He does understand himself. But his glories are always expanding. So even he doesn't come to the end of understanding. But that is no fault in him. His omniscience and omnipotence are not compromised by him not fully understanding himself. Because it's just like Vishwanathachakra Thakur gave the example, that omniscience is not compromised by one's failing to understand a rabbit's horn. You follow the example? There's no such thing as a rabbit's horn. Rabbits don't have horns. So if you don't understand it, it doesn't mean that you're just an ignorant fool. You don't understand a rabbit's horn. What a fool. You never heard of Coca-Cola? Something which everyone knows of, unless you, maybe if you're living in a mountain valley in Papua New Guinea, you may not know, although it's quite possible because there is. You're living in the jungle somewhere. But everyone knows. If you haven't heard of it, then you can hardly be considered a normal person in the modern age. It's just a normal thing that you see in human advertisements with Coca-Cola. But if something doesn't exist, so you can't be blamed for not knowing about it. Because when the rabbit's horn doesn't exist. So, in the same way, the limit of Krishna's glories does not exist. So there's no fault on Krishna's part for not understanding it, because it doesn't exist. So we should have the point here, we should understand Krishna. There's an effort to understand Krishna, but one cannot fully understand it. But one should understand it. When Prabhupada was asked about this, that we're enjoined to understand Krishna, but then it's not possible to fully understand him. So what does that mean? So Prabhupada said, we should try to understand it as much as he explained himself in Bhagavad Gita. This is what we should understand. How is that? Matakparataram nanya kinchir asti dhananda. Krishna describes so many things about himself. No one is equal to, or no one or nothing is equal to or greater than him. So many things he describes. Brahmanam pratishtaham. I'm the basis of the impersonal Brahman. So many things. Aham vaishvanaro guruva paranam devamashvatam prana parasamayam vichanyanam chaturvedam. Another of his forms is the vaishvanara fire within the stomach, the digestive. So one form of Krishna. Nita Ramasya Jagata. He is the father of the universe. In so many ways, Krishna describes himself in Bhagavad Gita. So we should try to understand him. And then we can go more and more deep by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, the incarnations of the Lord, by understanding Krishna, the original form of personality. But it's not exactly an intellectual. Of course, these books replete with philosophy. It's not simply some stories. It's full of philosophy. And some intelligence is required to understand that. But which kind of intelligence? Not simply material intelligence. Purified intelligence. Krishna conscious intelligence. If one has the attitude to serve Krishna, then he can understand Krishna. If one does not have the attitude to serve Krishna, he can never understand Krishna. Even if he's otherwise materially very intelligent. That's why in one sense, anyone who's chanting Hare Krishna, even if he doesn't have a basic education, is more intelligent than Einstein or any other famous intelligent person. They're more intelligent in the sense that they've understood that which is worth understanding. Just like, for instance, someone may be a very brilliant scientist, and he can make theories about the workings of the universe and movements of planets and so many things. But if he doesn't understand very basic, I mean, in other ways he may be very unintelligent. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't eat properly, he doesn't look after his body properly. Often big scientists are like that. So from in one sphere, he's very intelligent. And in another sphere, looking after his basic maintenance, he's not. So in the same way, a devotee may not be very expert in literature and grammar and understanding politics and science, but he knows that which is most important to him. He knows that knowledge which is the knowledge of his very self. That knowledge which can actually be a benefit, just like one may be. When I was at school, one person was working as a PhD in physics, but he was working as a lab assistant. He couldn't get any other job. Lab assistant, you know, they meet in school, they come and set up the experiments for the kids to do silly little experiments with Bunsen burners. Silly little means he's far more advanced. His knowledge is far more advanced than his. couldn't benefit. He couldn't apply that. So it didn't help. That famous story is there of the boatman and the scholar. The scholar, he was a great scholar. He was chiding the boatman. You don't know about meteorology, you don't know about ornithology, you don't know about paleontology. Maybe there was an old dinosaur floating down the river. You don't know any of these things. No, no, no. And then the storm came and the boat started to go under. And then the boatman, who didn't know anything about meteorology, ornithology, paleontology, in the middle of the river, as the boat was going under, he asked the great scholar, "Do you know how to swim?" "No." So that knowledge is, as he goes underwater, about different species of birds and different formations of clouds and as he drowns, the knowledge doesn't help him. So the knowledge that can really help us is the knowledge of ourselves, who we are, who is God, what is our relationship with him. This is the most essential knowledge. And if we don't have this knowledge, then all other forms of knowledge, they may be temporarily beneficial, but they cannot ultimately help us. Temporarily beneficial means for some years, but if we have a certain kind of degree, we can use that knowledge to get a job which may help us to earn some money. But after some time, even we see now so many people, they got degrees, trained as computer engineers and this and that, and already that whole field is in recession. So many people, before that it was, when I first came to India, in the 70s, everyone wanted to study to become an engineer. And then there became a glut, or a surplus of engineers, so you found. At that time you get an engineering degree, you could earn so much money. And then after some time, there were too many engineers, and then they found engineers sitting at home, gazing at the wall, because there was nothing for them to do. No work. So even within this life, the knowledge that you attain may not be of any use. I remember also at school, it's very difficult for me to get enthusiastic about studying, because even the teachers themselves admitted that the moment you finish your exam, you can just forget everything, because it's of no practical use whatsoever, all these things you're learning. What is the geography? Followers of Prabhupada, who work so hard to give Krishna to others, it's the duty of all the followers of Prabhupada to try to spread Krishna consciousness. There's so much work to do. Every time a jiva leaves his body, especially a human body, without taking to Krishna consciousness, his whole life is spoiled. I was just hearing this morning, cassette, Prabhupada chanting Chaitanya Chaitanya. This is a very nice verse which Jena Shule Gauravana Tara Jandra Vittavaya Paya Amitadini Pia Visha Gautama Janaya Shre Kinnitani Vaya says that anyone who takes the human form of life, but they don't hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they don't take part in some Jaina Shakti Gauravana, his life is simply useless. He's taking birth as just a burden on his mind, just a waste of time. That getting the opportunity to drink the best nectar, instead, he's gone into a pot of poison and drinking it. So what is the use of him having money? He might as well just die. Paya manusha janma jena shane gauravam tara janma vittam paya mudhuni piya visha vittam janya shay kenena humana. He's just putting it very succinctly. It's just like your life is wasted. So we have to preach this Krishna consciousness. distribute Prabhupada's books. And of course, Virginia has so many things. Prabhupada especially stressed this. We have to distribute these books of spiritual knowledge. We have the Bhagavatam in Gujarati. We distribute it in some sets. Some are going up. Try and give this. Of course, Gita. It's the basic book. And after Gita, they can study Bhagavatam. All knowledge from Bhagavatam. About Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. Any question? Well, Krishna understands himself. Of course he understands himself. Otherwise, how can he explain himself in Bhagavad Gita? He understands himself, but his glories are so unlimited that even he cannot fully describe them. He does understand himself, but then again it says that he doesn't because he's unlimited, and there's no end to his glory. There's no end to his qualities, there's no end to his mercy. So it's not that he's in ignorance. He knows everything about himself also, but at the same time he doesn't. It's inconceivable. Achintya. लेकिन यदि ऐसे जाली करते हैं दो हत्या करते हैं तो स्वर्ग नहीं है तो वो विश्वास अच्छा है मतलब जो आदि लोग जो मर्ज सामने रहते किंतु यदि हम अवसर होते वैदिक ज्ञान प्राप्त करने के लिए तो दूसरा धाम पालन करने का कोई जरूरत नहीं ये उत्तम ज्ञान है और उत्तम पद्धति है ऐसा नहीं है कि हम मुसलमान के विरुद्ध ऐसा नहीं है हम जानते हैं कि सब जगत निवासी सब माया से मोहित है चाहे भी मुसलमान या क्रिश्चियन या नास्तिक या हिंदू सब माया मुक्त है इसलिए हम सबको कृष्ण भक्ति की चाल रहते हैं और ऐसे है अनेक मुस्लिम कृष्ण भक्ति को आदि करते हैं इस देश में नहीं विशेषकर इंडोनेशिया में कोई कोई और सेंट्रल एशिया जो यूएसएसआर में तजिकिस्तान उज्बेकिस्तान तुर्कमेनिस्तान इंडिया और रशिया में भी अनेक मुस्लिम हैं जन्मगत मुस्लिम जो अभी कृष्ण भक्त दीक्षित कृष्ण भक्त हर साल मैं रशिया जाता हूँ और दस पंद्रह मुसलमान शिष्यों को दीक्षा देता हूँ
महाराज जो गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरु विष्णु गुरु देव महेश्वर इस श्लोक का दर्शन समझाइए
इसका तात्पर्य जैसे कि श्री कृष्ण स्वयं बोलते हैं कि सर्वदेव माया गुरु गुरु तो सभी देवताओं के प्रतिनिधि है वो मायावादी लोग इस श्लोक हमने लेकिन उसमें वो साइड है कैसे साइड है
गुरु तो
सृष्टि काल का नहीं है,
गुरु यदि बोलते नहीं विष्णु ब्रह्म महेश्वर
ठीक है, एक ब्रह्मांड सृष्टि काल हम देखते नहीं, अभी वो लीला नहीं करता। गुरु तो विष्णु और सभी देवताओं की पति होती है, साक्षात विदित्य ने समस्त शास्त्र देते सभी किंतु प्रभो या प्रिय वंदे गुरु श्री चारायण मंगलवादी में कहते याद है कि गुरु साक्षात हरि साक्षात हरित देव, इसका मतलब साक्षात हरि की शक्ति संपन्न है, साक्षात हरि नहीं, मतलब यदि जय जय की श्री कृष्ण अर्जुन को भगवद गीता ज्ञान दिए और यदि हम सदगुरु से भगवद गीता सीखते हैं तो जैसे अर्जुन थोड़ा ज्ञान लेना श्री कृष्ण से, तो हम वैसे यदि हम जैसे अर्जुन और गुरु जैसे कृष्ण, तो गुरु तो कृष्ण नहीं है लेकिन यदि गुरु जैसे कृष्ण उपदेश दे वैसे उपदेश देते हैं कुछ परिवर्तन नहीं करते, तो हम जैसे अर्जुन एक ही पावर है तो यही याद है, तो कृष्ण आदि गुरु जगत गुरु है और अर्जुन ब्रह्मा इत्यादि शिष्यों को ज्ञान दिया है, तो गुरु कौन है जो श्री कृष्ण की प्रतिनिधि है, जैसे कृष्ण शिक्षा दे तो वैसे एक ही शिक्षा देते हैं, तो इसलिए श्री कृष्ण से अभिन्न जय श्री कृष्ण, लेकिन तो गुरु तो स्वयं भगवान है,
गुरु तो जानते हैं कि मैं कृष्ण नहीं हूँ, मगर शिष्य को गुरु तो प्रति कहता है कृष्ण समझ के अर्पण कर समर्पण करना चाहिए,
सब कुछ गुरु को अर्पण करना चाहिए लेकिन ऐसे अर्पण करना चाहिए कि गुरु श्री कृष्ण की अति निधि है और गुरु का हम अर्पण करते हैं तो हम मेरे गुरु उनके गुरु को अर्पण करेंगे और अपन गुरु गुरु के गुरु उनके गुरु अर्पण करेंगे और ऐसे ऐसे लाइन नहीं तो कृष्ण राधा और राधा श्री कृष्ण को अर्पण करेंगे, तो ऐसे गुरु नहीं है कि गुरु कृष्ण है, तो वो ऐसे सोचते हैं तो मूर्ख है। हरे कृष्ण श्रीमद् भागवतम।